Okay. So we've already had two really good talks trying to explore the influence of the equation of state on binary neutron star merger dynamics. So in this talk, I was actually going to focus more on the nuclear physics underpinnings and talk about three topics. The cold equation of state, that's what would go into understanding the mass and radii of neutron stars, what we know and what we currently don't know about it. Then I'll mention something about crust physics, because there's some exciting new ideas about precursors that may be excited by interaction between tidal forces and internal crust modes. And I'll briefly talk about hot and dense matter, which will be relevant for post-merger dynamics. And the word might there is important, because although I worked on the equation of state, I haven't really worked on binary neutron star mergers, so it's hard for me to gauge how much of this is actually going to manifest in observables that one sees. So in that sense, I'm a foolish supporter of gravity waves. I don't really know how this is going to affect it, but I think there's some interesting physics we can extract from it. Okay, so when the neutron star is cold, we know that there's at least a fraction of the neutron star we can describe using theoretical tools we currently have, and it's quite complex. So the just to remind people, given that this is a diverse audience, the neutron star structure, we think, has an outer crust, which is a solid, and the crust could be about 1 to 2 kilometers long. And the inner core, the outer and inner cores, are divided basically based on the region we can calculate and the region we don't have any kind of control theory to calculate. So you have a solid, which is kind of a terrestrial solid. It has nuclei and electrons. Of course, the electrons are ultra-relativistic. And then you have the inner crust, which is already quite exotic because it's both solid and it's superfluid. And understanding some of the properties, at least even the modes of oscillation of this state, is turning out to be quite interesting, with lots of rich physics. The bulk of the neutron star, the mass and radius, is determined not by the crust, but mostly by the properties of the core. The core is also, when it's cold, is likely to be a superconductor, because the protons in the core pair to form Cooper pairs, and neutrons can also pair in different channels than those in the outer crust. And the inner core is densities where we don't have a reliable theory. So there are lots of possibilities, but we can't be certain. So the interior structure is still very uncertain. So we roughly have three classes of neutron stars: the regular vanilla neutron stars that are made of nuclear matter all the way to the core. Then we have, because of our uncertain knowledge of the inner parts, you could have phase transitions to form either quark matter or hyperons or kaons. And these objects are called hybrid stars. And then finally, there's a class of objects which potentially can exist, but we know very, very little about it. That these are strange stars, and this would actually require normal matter to be metastable. I'll briefly discuss these two objects. I won't talk much about this, because this I think is very speculative, and at best, it deserves very little attention. It's a monster. In principle, we can't exclude it, but we know too little about it, and it often gets more attention than it deserves. So although we don't know much about the inner core, we actually do know quite a bit about matter between, say, 1 and 2 times nuclear density. And that's really going to be the theme of my talk for the first half. And the reason is, we actually have theory that can be validated by nuclear experiments and also by cold atom experiments to tell us about very strongly coupled systems with short-range interactions. And these constraints between 1 and 2 times nuclear density will actually improve in the short term. So what is the nuclear equation of state? So basically, if you knew the energy per particle, energy per nucleon as a function of density, you know everything that you need to know to calculate the mass and radius and the equation of state. So typically what nuclear physicists do is they write the energy as a function of density. This is the neutron density and proton density, and this is the total density. So there are two extreme states of matter: the symmetric phase with equal numbers of neutrons and protons, and the highly asymmetric neutron matter phase where you only have neutrons. So nuclei exist here, and they can slowly move around this a little bit. The asymmetries that we see in nuclei are small. So most of the information we get, unfortunately, is about this nuclear state, which is very symmetric. But neutron stars exist with very small proton fractions. So we need to find a way not only to extrapolate in density, but also to extrapolate in asymmetry. So sometimes using constructing an equation of state with only constraints from nuclei can be very misleading. So we need to figure out a way to calculate neutron matter and find constraints for neutron matter, even though that can't be directly accessed in experiments. So one of the things we can extract by looking at slightly asymmetric nuclei is this quantity called the symmetry energy. It's the difference between energy of nuclear matter and neutron matter at nuclear density. And by looking at nuclear masses, we can extract what the symmetry energy is to this accuracy, to about 2 MeV. We think it's somewhere between 32 plus minus 2 MeV. So that's, this is minus 16 MeV, and neutron matter is roughly at 16 MeV plus minus 2 MeV. So we have that as an empirical constraint, but now we want to have a theory that can help us predict that and use this theory then to extrapolate. Okay. So that's really the key, to have a theory that can actually predict this empirical property of neutron matter. And most equations of state that are currently used don't do that. What they do is they try to fit nuclei, and then they extrapolate out to higher densities and higher asymmetries. So if you want to have a predictive theory, you want to start with something basic like the Hamiltonian that you had describes nucleon-nucleon interactions. And as far as we can tell, at least at nuclear densities, the non-relativistic approximation is still pretty decent. Relativistic effects can actually be subsumed in this potential. So the nuclear Hamiltonian contains a kinetic term, two body potentials, which are actually measured very well in laboratory experiments. And then we have three nucleon potentials. For this community that works on gravitational waves, I don't really need to introduce the three nucleon potential, because this is really like tidal forces. When you have two objects that interact, there's a two-body potential, but when you bring in a third object, if this object has internal structure, there's some kind of deformation of this object that means that you'll be sensitive to a three-nucleon force that's not present in the two-nucleon interaction. So there are two strategies to do this. One is you construct potentials that can describe the nucleon-nucleon scattering data to high accuracy. This is not unique. There are several potentials. These are not elementary particles. They have internal structure. So it turns out that you can have, a class of potentials that all describe the data very well. Typically, nuclear physicists have taken two approaches. One is these phenomenological local potentials, which are very amenable to computational methods to solve the many particle problem. And there are also, in recent times, chiral potentials, which have a systematic expansion in powers of momentum. So there is more control on error in these potentials, but they're very hard to use in certain many-body calculations. For these potentials, one has to use diagrammatic methods. For the rest of this talk, I'm going to talk about phenomenological potentials using, computational techniques that can do the many-particle quantum mechanics correctly. Once you have this, you have a way from going from the Hamiltonian to the energy per particle. And how do you validate this theory? Of course, you want to go from the Hamiltonian to the energy and make sure you get all the nuclear properties. You also want to get the empirical properties of nuclear matter, like saturation, density, compressibility, etc. And most interestingly, there's also a completely different area of physics that's providing constraints for strongly coupled Fermi systems with short-range interactions, and that's coming from actually cold atom experiments, which are extremely low density, but they're still strongly interacting with short-range forces. So what these experiments can actually do is they can create systems with arbitrarily strong interactions, and for the two-body interaction, the scattering length sets the strength of this interaction. So if the scattering length was very large, you have a very strongly coupled system. And when it's infinity, you actually have a very special system that's universal. And so if your theory can predict what these corrections due to interactions are to, say, the energy per particle and the superfluid gap in these fermionic systems, then you have some confidence that when you apply it to neutron matter under similar conditions, it'll work. Okay, so quantum Monte Carlo has actually been used, and it's predicted, and it was successful in predicting both the equation of state and pairing gap. So in fact, both neutron matter and cold atoms have very similar behavior at low density. So this universality actually helps us compare two very different physical systems, which nonetheless have strong short-range interactions. So we know that, roughly speaking, this theory works, and when applied to simple systems like cold atoms, you can actually predict to a few percent accuracy what the energy per particle is. So the difficulty really is in the three particle interactions, which are unique to nuclear matter. And so the three neutron force we know is very important even to predict properties of nuclei. And it's especially important to predict properties of neutron matter. So what this graph shows is the energy per neutron at nuclear saturation density. This is the empirical value that I discussed earlier. If you just assume that it was a Fermi gas, this is the value you would get. So there's a lot of attraction. You need to go from 35 MeV down to 14 MeV. It's important to note that at nuclear density, the repulsive nature of nuclear interactions are not yet becoming important. It's really largely attractive. Okay? So if you just put in two nucleon interactions, you get way too much attraction. So you get down to the lower end of things. So we know that the three nucleon interactions we can try to extract from nuclei give us repulsion. And that repulsion is small compared to the attraction from two neutron interactions, but it's crucial to get this get into the range of empirical values. There is still a large uncertainty of about 2 MeV because we don't know the structure of this three neutron interaction, and that actually is the main source of uncertainty for the neutron matter equation of state. So we can take this three nucleon potential, construct an equation of state using quantum Monte Carlo, and the results are shown here. So this is the energy per particle as a function of neutron density. So now we are at high enough density that we can see what's happening inside a neutron star. And here, for reference, I show the Fermi gas energy. So if you just had a free Fermi gas, that's the energy you'd have. And the different curves are for different three neutron forces. The lowest curve is one in which we've actually ignored the three neutron force. We've set that equal to zero. And this is the value where the neutron matter energy is 16 MeV. This is a little larger than 16 MeV. And this is 3 MeV larger than 16. So we tune the three neutron interaction to explore the range of empirical values that we find. And if in future experiments can pin this down, then only one of these curves will exist. What's important to note is that this is nuclear saturation density. So the three neutron contribution is small and well under control at nuclear density. But as you go to higher density, the uncertainty in the structure of the three neutron force can become very important. And based on the rate at which this error is increasing, you can conclude that you can't trust this theory past about, say, twice nuclear density. At that point, the three neutron contribution is becoming comparable to the two neutron contribution. You don't have a scheme anymore. You don't know if the four neutron contributions, et cetera, are under control. So what this is telling us is that we can compute to some degree between nuclear density and twice nuclear density. And beyond that, we don't have a reliable expectation for what the energy per particle is. Interestingly, this theory also predicts a correlation between the value of neutron matter energy and the slope. The value is just called E sim, and the slope is called L. So both of these quantities can be measured in experiments. Currently, the experimental constraints are very poor. But once we have a good constraint from experiments, then we'll be able to see if this, in fact, correlation, in fact, is tested out. So experiments currently trying to measure the slope and the value are all plotted here. This is a compilation made by Latimer. So this is the symmetry energy. We expect it to be somewhere between 32 and 34. Between 30 and 34, this is the L parameter. And there are various experiments that are trying to pin this down with different systematics. What's shown here is the band that I showed earlier, the correlation between L and S that we find in our theory. So perhaps in the next 5 years, there are more experiments that can inform us about whether the most important parameter actually turns out to be the slope L, because that's directly related to the pressure. Because the derivative of the energy with respect to density is a measure of the pressure. So I'll come to that in just a second. Okay, so we have a way of constructing the neutron matter equation of state. Mass and radius constrain the equation of state, so it'll actually provide some kind of constraint on the neutron matter energy. And so we know roughly from observations that the mass range is somewhere between 1.2 and 2 solar masses. The 2 solar mass object is actually very important. We heard a lot about it. The radius has been incredibly difficult to measure. And there are claims that they can measure radii to 1 kilometer or 2 kilometer accuracy, but the systematics are really, really bad, and we don't understand it. Nevertheless, if you collect all the radius measurements together, it lies in the range between 10 and 14 kilometers. So I'm just going to use that as, you know, this is the range of observations telling us about it. So if I construct neutron stars using the same Hamiltonian and three neutron interactions, this is the range of mass radius curves I get. So if I had no three nucleon force, I get neutron stars that don't even make a two solar mass object. So in some sense, that's, you know, indirect proof that we need more repulsion than what we get from just two nucleon and three nucleon interactions. And then you start making the three neutron interactions slightly larger, and you see how the errors are increasing, mainly from our uncertain knowledge of what the three neutron interaction is. But nevertheless, you get neutron stars with this equation of state that are between 12 plus or minus 1 kilometer for reasonable values of this symmetry energy. And it's also important to note two things. One is it's very hard to make neutron stars with radii greater than 14 kilometers in this way. And the main reason for that is that at low density, nuclear interactions are attractive. So if you want to make a star that's going to go up here, you need a lot of repulsion at very low density. So the obvious fact coming from nuclear physics, which at long distances nucleons attract each other, is actually telling us that, you know, making large radii neutron stars are very hard. And in fact, even this extreme value that you see with 35 MeV, you know, barely makes a 13.5 kilometer neutron star. I think from experiments, it looks more likely that they are between 11 and 13 for these equations of state. So, given this, the radius measurement is crucial. So if in 20 years of gravitational wave physics, we can get a few percent radius measurement with very different systematics than the systematics that we have from X-ray observations, that will be pretty amazing for nuclear physics. Because, you know, if you get a 1 kilometer radius, you will very clearly start pinning down these three and four, perhaps four neutron forces in a theory that's actually controllable. Okay, what about higher density? We know that, you know, these neutron stars are accessing densities, so this is the central density of these objects. So if you're looking at a 1.4 solar mass neutron star here, it has a central density already at about four times nuclear density. So we have a region where our theory is breaking down, and, you know, and it's possible that there are new phases in those densities. So for a lot of neutrons outside, and you have neutrons in the nucleus, but when you move a single nucleus, it entrains